I'll do this Invincible. Invincible season 2 part 2 coming in March. Damn, everything's coming in March. March
14th. Yeah, baby.
This is coming, so we're going to get the rest of Invincible.
Damn it. We just had Valentine's Day.
Just had Valentine's Day there too. Like I said, so this is the trailer for it. 4 episodes the rest of the season is going to be to round it out. We see what's going on here. You see Mark is still in space with kind of the bug creatures there. He's rebuilding their society after the Viltrumites came and fucked that up. You see what they're doing on Earth here. And then face all type of different threats. I'm going to go around. What do you guys think about this season 2 part 2 trailer here?
I'm going to say this as straight-faced, as cold, and as clinical as I can. Woo!
Yeah.
Yes, I fucking loved the first. I absolutely adore Invincible. I think it is one of the best written comic book shows on television. And a similar vein of The Boys, but the show has this inherently more optimistic and hopeful nature to it that is a real throwback to the two shows like Superman the Animated Series, or even to a certain extent, the original X-Men show, and even Spider-Man. But with that kind of grounded and gritty realism in terms of its action, showing the real consequences of what a world with superheroes looks like. And with season 2 having this intense emotional family drama with Mark, with Debbie, culminating in the final, in the mid-season finale where Mark goes to that, I think that planet was called the Thraxans. With that planet where he reunites with his father and he gives him a hug and just is dealing with that you are a monster and how do I reconcile that? And that in awesome actual action set piece where Mark comes into his own and starts fighting back against Viltrumites. That was cinema to me.
Dust, what do you think about this set trailer?
It's interesting to see it change from the comic book. Little things change and things that stay the same. And for the most part, it pretty much addresses a lot of aspects from the comic books and does its own thing. This one definitely feels a little bit more doing its own thing versus what happened in the comics, for better or worse. On its own, I think the animation is pretty solid. I think the voice acting is good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see it. I don't get the vibe of the hopefulness. It's just it's a very violent interpretation of what a JLA or a DC or Marvel verse is. It takes it and it looks at its conclusions and a lot because the creator of The Walking Dead, he tries to break them down and look at them from a systematic look of, well, in order to set these things up, they need to have systems, and these systems need to do this, and these characters would be this in this environment. Really, this is just a show of how do you deal with basically chaos coming at you 24/7 in a JLA setting. You're going to get very distinctive or to even inappropriate or bad people in positions they probably got to because they're the last one standing. And Mark is like one of the last few actual heroes who can actually do something. So that in itself is a high. I hope they keep that aspect. When the Viltrumites might become more, though, there's going to be a big scene, and I'm going to be curious how they handle that aspect of it. But until then, you can definitely feel they're speeding along a little bit more because in the comics, he didn't meet his father until much later. He had to do a lot of things.
Well, even in the comics, they shifted things around. I'm reading the first compendium of Invincible right now, and the whole fight with his father is much earlier in the book.
It is, yes.
To a lot of the events that happened in that first
season. Honestly, I do actually think a lot of the changes in season one were actually for the best to make a more fulfilling story, at least for a chapter.
Yeah,
the fight with the Earth's Guardians was a cakewalk. It meant nothing. He didn't get injured at all. Having him actually do things to him, it being a struggle, makes what he does even more horrifying. The fact that he was willing to take all that risks, and then what he says later is he did it with nothing. Yeah, and also makes the actions of him basically saying, "Look at how they have to do to try to twist our power." When it's you just don't get it.
Yeah, which makes that moment in the mid-season finale hit that much harder.
Yeah.
Is how do you go from a character that was that cold, just slaughtered thousands of people without a second thought, just used his son to massacre an entire subway, to caring about these bug people?
Yeah.
Chris, what are some of your thoughts here?
Yeah, if I can pick up right there, I didn't like watching the first few episodes of this new season. I wasn't trusting Omni-Man. I wasn't believing him. I was like, this is a trap. There's no way. There's no way you can do what you just did and suddenly have compassion. Like no, they showed us what he felt when he was like adrift and like by himself and I found purpose. I found meaning. I found something to feel.
Yeah, it was a case of using a needle drop well, because that entire opening of that episode, it's almost like a very cool silent film, because it's just set to a song by Nick Cave, and that is more or less telling the emotional story behind Omni-Man. And that when a needle drop is used well, it adds to a scene, or it can take the place of dialogue.
Yeah. This was a good strong trailer here. And seeing, does this kind of like we've seen other Invincible trailers do in the past, combines a lot of good action moments in here, sets up the table well we're gonna be seeing. I don't know if we're gonna
and a possible new major threat of the season with the Sequids coming back, which was a huge arc in the comics.
Yeah. You see with Sterling K. Brown, his character's up to his ability to cross dimensions there. I know people still...
the whack-ass Lizard League.
I know that people still holding that hope that maybe Spider-Man is going to make an appearance in this season. I don't think that's going to happen. Chris, maybe,
there was a comic run where Invincible crossed over into the Marvel Universe, and he had an adventure with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it happened once. It's the same thing. DC and Marvel have technically had crossovers, which, by the way, I mentioned that because they're actually releasing compendiums of them. They never did so beforehand. You had to find individual issues, but now they're actually releasing the compendiums of when DC and Marvel did crossover. So I think it's either Superman or Wonder Woman lifted up Thor's hammer at one point, or
Batman starts to have a fight with Captain America and they just fainting each other, and he reads him down. It's like, okay, it'll take a lot, but you can kick my ass.
Yeah, they basically have a moment where they both measure each other up, and
ever see a boxing match or a UFC fight. It's like those moments where you're fainting, you're trying to gauge your opponent.
Yeah, and they just both basically decide it's not worth it. You're not my real.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot more trouble than it's worth.
Because even if I win, it's really dragging you out of here after that point, and I'll be so beat up that it's kind of like a Pyrrhic victory.
But anyway, back to Invincible.
Yeah, back to Invincible.
And
maybe for once Mark can actually win a fight in these next four episodes.
I know, Jesus.
Fingers crossed.
That was one of the biggest thing when reading the comics, was just seeing how much Mark just gets his ass kicked in so many times.
But we kind of talked about it when back in the olden days of the show, when we were doing our weekly reviews of the first season of Invincible, and we got to the finale, and I don't think Mark is called Invincible just because he is invulnerable. It's more that he constantly gets his ass whooped. He constantly gets beaten down, broken, but he keeps getting back up. And that's why we love superheroes. That's why we keep gravitating to characters like Peter Parker, like a Bruce Wayne, like Superman.
It's the whole Rocky mantra of it's not how hard you get it, it's how hard you get hit and get keep getting up, keep coming.
And you do see an important moment in this trailer that you kind of see with one character who it looks like they are going to do that. And it's a very controversial moment that happens in the comic. Let's see how they kind of handle that moment.
It's probably one of the most controversial moments of the run of Invincible.
So I'm curious to see how they'll handle that and see how that's done. More Invincible goodness. March 14th it's coming pretty soon. So I guess they're just going to drop the one episode, I guess, on March 14th. And we're going to see the rest of
it. Damn it.
I guess I said they're going to drop it. They're not going to drop it all at once there. But, so we're getting that. All right. Next trailer we're going to be talking about is Godzilla Times Kong here. This is the new trailer for The New Empire. That's the latest movie that we're going to be coming out here. So we got introduced to Godzilla and Kong. Then we had them fight each other. Mm-hmm. Now they're teaming up. There we go. Now we're seeing it. Batman and Robin here.
The Rocky 3 of Godzilla and Kong.
It basically is. What you didn't see the fist bump at the end of Kong and Godzilla? Yeah. They basically fist bump at the end of that.
We see their little running on the beach montage moment in this trailer.
After they fought Mechagodzilla, he just gave him that look, and I would have not bat an eye if Godzilla just put, like, not looking at him, a fist out, and King Kong fist bumped. We cool. Yeah.
Maybe we'll get that.
We cool. I mean, we cool, look, bro. The original Godzilla, the franchise is so tone overload at this point. The original 2014 actually took itself kind of seriously.
Yeah, that played into a lot of Gareth Edwards' strength as a filmmaker, where he was interested in being on the ground level for a monster like Godzilla.
And it has its flaws, but it works.
Yeah, the major one being grossly overselling how big a presence Bryan Cranston was.
Right. Yeah, that's everyone has been open to it. The director even agrees about it. Bryan Cranston agrees about it, but he's like, I didn't make the script. I couldn't make changes. I asked to make changes and they told me no. So they couldn't do anything about it. But that's one of the things they would have changed, because it's like, I want to keep Bryan Cranston longer.
Yeah,
the best
scene in the entire
movie. And then Skull Island, which was...
Skull Island is that perfect distillation of just dumb fun that I think these movies and this tone that they're going for, that is where it thrives.
Yeah, this is basically, they basically turned this for what started as a mostly grounded and kind of serious, really alien-esque.
Let's get fucking silly!
Yeah, they made it into Monster Mash, which, why not?
I love a good Monster Mash.
Yeah, let's destroy all the pyramids. Let's destroy everything.
You gave me one of the hardest laughs I have ever had watching a movie in Kong Skull Island when Shay Whigham tries to sacrifice himself.
Oh,
that was the hardest I have ever laughed in my entire life.
Yeah, and
he just
kicks him away. That was so...
and they still keep the score like it was the triumphant sacrifice.
I know, it's so weird. No,
it's weird, but it's so awesome.
Yeah, and they made him... Yeah.
And I wasn't crazy about Kong Skull Island, but I dug Godzilla versus Kong for all of the wrong reasons.
Yeah, it's like,
plot,
what
don't
plot?
Care. Human characters, don't give a
get
shit.
Get out of here.
When Godzilla and Kong are on screen, yeah! Look, let's go!
At this point, honestly, in this movie, if Pacific Rim showed up, and it was
and here comes Gypsy Danger with a steel chair.
Exactly. If Gypsy Danger showed up and they just had the riff from Gypsy Danger show up, I'll be like, you know what? Yeah, we're here. Let's go. Let them fight. Let's do this. It doesn't matter anymore.
I would need to change my pants in that movie theater.
It would be hilarious. Yeah, this is the tone. This is a Monster Mash. You're either going to like it or not.
And I love that Godzilla is a character, is a figure that has been in history so much and has had so many different interpretations you can have two drastically different versions in theaters relatively around the same time, like Pretty with what Takashi Yamazaki did with Godzilla Minus One, which was my favorite movie of last year.
Yeah.
Which was noted, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Kino. And this movie looks like some dumb, fun trash, and I am with it.
Yeah, Godzilla has been, what people who haven't watched Godzilla films, Godzilla goes the gamut from being like a minus one or OG or Shin Godzilla being a very serious natural disaster that is, if nothing else, neutral evil or true neutral could give a crap about any of this, to neutral good. Where he's just like, I'll kind of help out, but I'm going to make collateral.
Henry Cavill at the end of Man of Steel.
Yeah, basically. And goofy as all hell. If Godzilla does a jump in the air and like claps his chest and does that jump in the air that he did in the older movies, or he does that, Kong holds the other ape and Godzilla runs at it and does a drop kick. Or shoots his atomic breath on the ground and flies like he did in other movies with Jet Jaguar. I'm all in. I'm a huge Godzilla fan, so I've seen the entire range and spectrum, and I love them all for different reasons, some more than others. So I have to pick favorites.
Yeah.
And I like that they brought back Adam Wingard to do this movie, because he was a director I was kind of very hot and cold on. I loved his segment on VHS. I adore Your Next, and I fucking love The Guest. But
he did The Guest?
Yeah, that was him. It was Holy him and crap. Simon Barrett that did that movie. But whenever he wasn't working with Simon Barrett, that's when you kind of like started to see the cracks, like with the Death Note remake.
Oh, yeah.
But with Godzilla versus Kong, that was like, okay, I'm just leaning into dumb fun, and it looks like he's doing that again here. Which, let's go.
Yeah. Chris, what are your thoughts here?
Godzilla minus one was like a real game changer. Once I had that, I didn't really want. I don't need anything else. They can re-release it in America, please. Mm-hmm. Or you know,
yes,
they did it black and white.
I saw the black and white version, and it hits just as hard.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's like they like completely changed the sound mixing too, so it feels like it was a movie that would have been released in like 52.
Yeah, you could have put film grain, artificial film grain over it, like they kind of do.
They did.
Which they kind of do. That's what I'm saying. They didn't have to do that, but they did. And it actually makes it interesting, like different. Even though it's the same movie, it does give a different feel.
Mm. Yeah. So for this new movie, I really enjoyed Monarch: Legacy of Monsters. Mm-hmm. The writing actually supported the human characters and made them interesting. Mm-hmm. So if that show ties into this new movie, like I think it will or might. Mm-hmm. I'll be a lot more interested. If not, then I'll see it. But yeah,
this is more seems to be more connected with the other movies, not the TV show.
There is that scene I think when they jump into like a portal, like right here, which I think is from the show.
Yeah.
Which if you watch the show, that like there's like a portal that's like another dimension kind of where there's like
basically the way I explain it is that there's a veil where the monsters come that's how they show up, is there's a veil and an alternate like world that's connected with our own
pocket dimension
basically. Gotcha. Yeah, it's a pocket dimension where monsters they show up kaiju show up and leave, which if you're gonna have a kind of an explanation, it's like that's not the stupidest reason
as far as explanations in Godzilla movies, it's probably like on the level of smarter.
Sure. And it's better than Kong being from like the inside of the planet.
Oh, Hollow Earth.
The Hollow Earth theory. That was, you could have just kept it there, but whatever. It doesn't matter. Both theories can exist. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's dumb. None of this matters. Why even have characters? Just get me a mech and fight the monkey and the Godzilla. Go.
Just let this lizard and this goddamn monkey fight.
Which it seems like they're fighting a villain. They're coming together to fight. I don't know if, I guess this
Cobra type. It's the Scar King.
Orangutan.
The Orangutan Scar King.
Who's coming there, coming together to fight this creature. So it's going to be interesting if they can present this creature as a big enough threat. I wonder why he's painted
at the end.
Maybe
he'll get supercharged. Oh, it's like super
Saiyan. Yeah, it's like it's already been leaked from the toys that are being released, but Shimo is another kaiju that's involved in this, and he's basically an ice monster.
Okay, that makes sense of like having something big enough.
And you kind of see it, I think, very briefly in this trailer here.
Yeah, like you see when he's fighting the Cobra type one, the Scar King there, that another villain kind of comes down, he shoots the breath at Kong.
Oh shit, never mind. Just point away. It was like, how can you possibly make an ape-themed villain scarier than Cobra in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes? It was like, how can you?
Yeah.
I mean, this ape talked.
Yeah, you see that he's got his own weapon here that messes up Kong's hand, so they have to give him a power.
They gave him the Infinity Gauntlet.
They gave him the power glove. It's so bad.
So I think this is where the creature kind of comes in. The other kind of villain here comes in, the ice creature here, because you see him shoot his breath here. Yeah, and he's got his axe here. He's got Stormbreaker.
He's got
Stormbreaker.
Yeah. So, Kong, I mean, it is.
And as far as human characters coming back, I like that they brought back Rebecca Ferguson. I like that they brought back the deaf actor. And I like that they brought back Brian Tyree Henry. Because out of all the human characters that I felt were very kind of just like milquetoast in Godzilla versus Kong, he was the one person that I felt understood the assignment. He understood the kind of movie that he was in.
Yeah. Kaylee Hotley is her name. Mm. She plays Gia.
I wonder if Skarsgård would be in this one. Probably not.
Yeah, he was in the last one.
They replaced him with Dan Stevens.
Which, yeah, I guess they did.
Yeah, which won the guest reunion with Adam Wingard. So yeah. I'm always in favor of that. And also, I love Dan Stevens as an actor.
I need subtitles like you are when you're watching like one of those weekly shows, those soap operas. Mm. And it's like the character of whatever is now played by Dan whatever. I need that. If they're going to do that, I need to have like a narrator just show up and tell me, oh, okay, all right. Not that I knew who they were.
I'm sure Dan Stevens isn't playing the same character that Skarsgård played, but
you know what?
It's kind of like the Suicide Squad movie. Yeah. It's like going from Deadshot to Bloodsport.
You know what?
Like, at least, character description, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, but at least Bloodsport was actually black.
And also, you know, actually interesting.
Yeah, Idris Elba. It wasn't just my daughter, my daughter, my daughter. Give me my daughter.
Y'all jokers must be crazy.
My daughter, give me my daughter.
No. He kind of hates his
Rick
daughter.
Flag, give me my daughter.
Him and his daughter. It's like, yeah, take a part. Oh, fuck you. Fuck you.
Fuck you. Your mother.
I stole, only that I got caught. I did not only disappointed that you got caught, I'm disappointed you stole something as stupid as a TV watch.
That's what's kind of happening here, in this trailer. Yeah, so you see that. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm, you know, like I said, it looks like it's dumb fun seeing them kind of team up. Looks like it's gonna make for something good here.
I'm getting popcorn back.
There it looks like maybe Kong is also going to get an upgrade there with his powers. And he's gonna go Super Saiyan.
I want jets to come out of his van brace so he punches harder. Look, if we're just gonna stupid, I'm just gonna throw out dumb ideas and be like, all right, we're going, let's go over the top 1980s Thundercats He-Man shit. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, you see him, he's like, he punches out the dude's teeth and his teeth kind of falls down like a fucking
I am living in that tea house, that tooth house. Let's do it. Let's make it do something.
Rocky 4.
Rocky 4, let's do it.
It's Rocky 3. It's
Club of Lang.
Wait, go back. Is that who I thought it was? So there's like this tribal woman that, I could have swore that was Olivia Chang.
Maybe. Let's see here. Not here? Here? This woman right here?
No, it's not her. Never mind.
Okay. Yeah. But I don't know. I think these are people just indigenous to Kong Island or some Skull Island or something like that.
No, the Hollow Earth probably.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Or no, they actually might be like what's left of the Skull Island crew because they just said they all died off screen. Maybe they're like,
that's Fala Chen. She was a Shang-Chi's mother.
Shang-Chi's mom. I was going to say Fala Chen. Yeah. Shang-Chi's mom.
Oh, okay.
Well, all right then.
Yeah. So when is this coming out again? Let me see.
Not soon enough.
It is March 29th. March 29th.
March 29th. Another thing coming out in March. But yeah, March 29th. And we are going to be doing a review for Shin Godzilla before this comes out. So I
get ready for red tape and procedures.
Woo!
Yeah. So we're going to do that one there.
Yeah, that Shin Godzilla is very much treats Godzilla as a proper natural disaster and goes through a lot of the bureaucratic angle of it.
Yeah, that movie is an allegory for the Fukushima reactor.
And a pretty solid one, honestly. It's probably the best thing that guy's done in a while.
So, final trailer that we're going to be talking about is for X-Men 97. So, finally, we have a trailer for this. This is the continuation of the X-Men series from the 90s here. Very good opening is this. You know what I mean? It has kind of the opening of, like,
previously it's like, previously on X-Men.
Bringing you back there when you watched it, the VHS there, tapes on top of it.
If that premiere does not open with previously on X-Men, then why the fuck did you even bother?
Yeah. Some people were questioning, so the animation style, it kind of looks like it's taking the 90s animation style, kind of bringing it to more modern day HD kind of version of it. Some people thought the animation looked kind of stiff. What's your kind of opinion on the animation here?
I don't have an issue with it. It is kind of doing that, you know, bringing the original style of the 90s animated series, but with more like modern techniques. But I think like the whole point of this is that this is just continuing the story, the themes, the look of the 90s show. And for what it is, I dig it.
Yeah. What about you, Des? You have an issue with the animation?
Yeah, it looks a little choppy. It looks a little choppy. And I mean, the original animation wasn't completely smooth by any means. It had its form, but you could still feel the issue.
The show was choppy even for the 90s, but you were kind of just so taken by the story and by the characters that you kind of ignore it.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? What do you think?
Just watching the trailer again, it's obviously more polished. It does kind of feel like Clone Wars season 7, where that had
Disney
backing up the money.
Exactly. And even I said with Clone Wars, with Tales of the Jedi, with Star Wars The Bad Batch, it's like that was initially an animation style that it was like kind of choppy. It was kind of ugly to look at. But as
kind of stop motionist.
As the show went on, it ended up taking on its own kind of charm with it.
Yeah. Like season 1 through 3 of the one through four.
That animation was rough.
It didn't get a real budget, kind of better budget until 5 and 6.
Yeah, season 5 is when they started to like look smoother.
When they brought it to, I think season 5 was when they brought it to Netflix.
Yes, and also when that's also when they stopped telling it non-linear. It actually they actually started being like, okay, no more just
more serialized.
No more serialized. No more going back in time, going to talk about care. This is, we're just continuing the story from where we are right now.
Yeah. So, this trailer for X-Men feels like that. It just feels smoother, a little, maybe a little brighter. Like, like y'all said, HD. I'm excited for it. Yeah.
I appreciate the B-ball court.
Yep, for sure. The pool in the back, the basketball court.
Yeah.
And also,
I'm looking forward
to
the
biggest thing I appreciate, the more epic and rendition of the original theme song.
Yeah, that's fine.
Which I'm kind of like, especially after seeing The Flash, I'm always like a little skeptical of stuff that is, you know, very, very explicitly going for nostalgia. But when that theme song hit, I was like, let's go! And even in this moment here, where you get to see, you know, characters using their powers in concert with each other, where Gambit charges Wolverine's claws, it's like, okay, come on.
Yeah. So X-Men team here. So you got Cyclops is going to be there. You got Jean Grey. You got Rogue. You have Beast, Jubilee. You also have Storm. You also have Gambit, and you're also going to have Morph, who looks like that's the main team you're going to see at first here. as well. And you do have some of the actors who originally voiced the characters in the 90 animated series coming back to do it. Most notably, you do have Cal Dodd, who voiced Wolverine, coming back to voice the character there. Yeah, and you also do have the actress who voiced Rogue, who also is coming back.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, you also have the actress who played Jubilee in the show, but she's voicing a different character.
Okay. She's voicing.
Yeah, she kind of can't really play the same character because she was young. I mean, you could, but it would definitely sound older than the character that they're playing.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Storm's haircut? It is 80s authentic, technically.
So let me see if I can go to
it. I like it.
She did have that in the 80s when she was she lost her powers actually for a little bit. She lost her powers for a bit, and she ran the mohawk and I think it was like a leather jacket and went around and tried to do small. They experimented a lot in the 80s with the X-Men.
Yeah, so this is a good shot of all of them right here. Jean is also pregnant, as you see there, and they were just got through playing basketball, which apparently is from a Chris Claremont where he did that. In a run there in the comics. And, so this is a good show. Oh, Bishop. I forgot to mention
Bishop. Bishop's right over there, top right.
Top right there. So Storm, this is her with her haircut. I liked her hair better in X-Men Evolution. I liked her hair better there. I'm not a big fan of the mohawk myself there. But yeah, this is a good shot of the team. And then this is where Magneto, so it seems like they're keeping Xavier at the end of the series. He died. They're keeping it that. And then there is a storyline in the comics where Magneto eventually, he becomes the new headmaster of Professor X's school there. And he eventually ends up taking up as leadership of the X-Men. That happened in House of M, and also happened in Age of Apocalypse as well.
It's one of the more interesting runs because it dives a bit more into Magneto, as he and Professor Xavier were friends, even though they disagreed fundamentally.
They were friends. They were brothers, and that's something that for as many flaws as the reboot trilogy had with First Class and on, that was always a thing that stood out about those movies. It was the brotherhood dynamic between Charles and Eric.
Yeah. He looks like the villain from Ghostbusters, doesn't he?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, you do.
That's interesting. But you get Magneto, who's also in this. I don't know if it's the same voice actor who voiced him in the animated series. I don't believe so.
But a moment that got me in this trailer was hearing Cyclops get to drop the line of, to me, my X-Men.
Let's see it.
To me, my X-Men.
So you do have that there. That was a cool
one. Which was always Charles's line in the original show. And it's like characters actually growing from and changing based off of that. And, you know, finally an interpretation of the X-Men that doesn't make Scott Summers look like a total bitch.
Honestly, that's the biggest disservice they've done. They've done a lot of disservice to the X-Men characters, but Scott... in the up to like I see the 80s and 90s roles, he did evolve. He did marry Jean, had kid.
His like biggest thing in the original X-Men trilogy was getting cucked by Wolverine.
Oh my God.
Yeah, does he kind of get cucked here too?
Together in this? As a team. Jeez, Bob, keep buzzing in my ear.
Still talking shit.
He's Wolverine. He's still gonna talk
he's
shit.
He's surly as fuck.
It's gonna happen. It's just that Scott doesn't care. He's gonna tell him anyways. He's not afraid of Wolverine.
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder if there's gonna be a repeat of, you know, maybe this moment here, which is one of my favorite moments from the animated series.
Punched in the stomach.
Yeah.
Episode one, baby.
Cyclops. I know how you feel about it, Wolverine, but.
Yeah. Let him finish for him.
Yeah, no. And he's just like, you don't know nothing, bub. You don't know nothing. You. And Jean like runs over to Scott and she's like, what is wrong with you? No, she does. She's like helping Scott up. She's like, you just sucker punched him when he was trying to like, you asshole. And he's just like, ah, and he like goes and has a tantrum. It's funny. The entire he's just so mad. He's such a surly asshole. Yeah. As Wolverine is. He's a surly asshole.
Yeah, he is a 100-year-old man. He is very curmudgeonly.
Yeah. I mean, he could have probably punched him in the jaw, but I mean, he's only like 4'11", so yes.
He's a short a-hole. We got spoiled with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. That is not really the original character. Yeah. He's way more surly, way more old manny. Actually, closer to his Logan interpretation.
Logan.
And with this paper here, you also see Peter Parker, who also did make an appearance on the X-Men animated series, Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He would show up there sometime.
Back in the day where, you know, animation was kind of its own thing, so they didn't give a fuck about characters crossing over.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool that they did that.
Hellfire Gala, nice reference.
Yeah, and you can even see, and I think another shot of the Daily Bugle is like text by Eddie Brock, photos by Peter Parker.
Yeah, just right above here. Yeah, a little bit of the.
There's also a missing poster right behind it. Right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, people excited for this. Yeah, I mean, it's number one trending video right now.
At worst, I'm very intrigued with how they pull this off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chris, any thoughts? Any more final thoughts here before we head out?
I'm excited to watch it. It's Nick said, it's a good excuse to get back into it and to rewatch. Historically, I'm not crazy about Marvel animation on a whole. It wasn't until 2018 Spider-Verse. I was like, this is like the first Marvel animation like since X-Men Evolution I've thoroughly like enjoyed.
That was Sony.
Put some respect on the Spectacular Spider-Man.
Spectacular Spider-Man is really not talked about as much as it should be.
I don't think I watched it. That
was like on the last leg.
Disney XD or Disney Jetix or
no, that was before the Disney deal.
It was
that,
a Fox joint.
It was a Fox Kids.
It was Fox Kids. Okay. Had some actually good, probably the second best symbiote. Like Venom introduction, I've seen.
It is my favorite interpretation of the Venom story, and it was show run by Greg Weisman.
Yeah,
who did Gargoyles, who also did Young Justice.
It was going to have a fourth and final season, and then end with a movie, like a TV movie, but canceled. Disney bought Fox, and then they couldn't agree to it. And so that left it in limbo.
And which is like even more maddening because Josh Keaton, there's like a cameo of Spider-Man, I think during Earth's Mightiest Heroes, which is one of the Disney XD shows. And Josh Keaton, who voiced him in Spectacular Spider-Man, recorded dialogue for that. But when the episode came to air, it was Drake Bell. Talk about a downgrade.
At least we got him to come back for Spider-Verse 2. And he showed up and actually had a line. He had a line and showed up. I was like, you referenced
it. Yeah, it was like they put respect on the goats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this X-Men animated series is coming out I think March 20th is when it's gonna be. Mm. So yeah, very exciting.
So we'll find out. Yeah, we'll probably find out if they're doing the weekly binge or if they're doing dropping it all at once like they did with Echo.
First season will consist of 10 episodes, and the second season is already in development. They're doing that.
They usually do two seasons. Saves the animation.
Yeah. And also, they said that X-Men characters will show up in What If Season 3.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, so they're actually finally using them.
I know you were talking about that, wanting to see a little bit more different characters.
It only took three seasons of What If for them to actually use Sam Wilson's Captain America again.
Yeah, to have him finally be in there. We're getting some different characters, not just different variations of Steve and Tony and all those characters, Bruce. So that's finally nice. All right, so one last piece of news here. The casting. We finally have our Fantastic Four finally there. So it's finally
Which leaked a while ago with this exact cast, but it's nice to, you know, have an actual confirmation.
Yeah, which kind of was in a more stealth kind of. They just dropped it on Valentine's Day. They they made a Marvel video with a post on their official Twitter, and then they had it out. So this is it. So you have Pedro Pascal, who's going to be Reed Richards. You got Vanessa Kirby, who's Sue Storm. You got Joseph Quinn, who's going to be Johnny Storm. And then you also have Eben Moss-Bacharach, who's going to be Ben Grimm, going to be the thing. So Vanessa Kirby, you've probably seen. She was in the latest, not the latest one, but she was in. Oh yeah, she was. She was in the latest Mission Impossible movie. There, she was in a couple of those. She was in Hobbs and Shaw. Pedro Pascal.
She's the best part about Hobbs and Shaw.
She is the best part about
Hobbs and Shaw. Also Academy Award nominated for Pieces of a Woman.
I haven't seen that. I have to check it out.
It is heartbreaking.
Pedro Pascal, you know, Last of Us, Mandalorian, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he excels at either playing like very charismatic, badasses, surly dad types.
Yeah. Joseph Quinn, who most notably is in Stranger Things. He was the character there. What was his character's name again?
Eddie Munson.
Eddie Munson.
The man who dropped a goddamn rock opera in the face of hell.
Yeah. And then Eben Moss Bacharach, who people know he's in The Bear. He was also in another Marvel property, MCU. He was in The Punisher. He was Micro.
Yeah, as like, first off, cousin! All right.
He was in Andor.
Oh, yeah.
Also, yes. And just won the Emmy for Best Supporting Actor for The Bear.
Mm, yeah. So shout out to him. Yeah. So what do y'all think of this casting right here?
I like three. I have issues with one member of this cast, and that is Pedro Pascal, who I think is a phenomenal actor. He is one of our best working actors today. But with Marvel and with a character like Mr. Fantastic, with Reed, with casting an actor like Pedro Pascal, I kind of have a little bit of this worry of Pascal is such this like well-known, well-recognized actor. Am I going to see this take as this is Reed Richards, or am I just going to watch this say, oh, it's Pedro Pascal?
Mm.
Yeah. I'm fine with 3/4.
Yeah, which just to, you know, have a counter argument to that, I absolutely adored the game The Last of Us. I like going into hearing the anticipation and the news about the HBO show, hearing that Pedro Pascal was playing Joel, I couldn't imagine a scenario where I thought that he could even like possibly live up to the performance that Troy Baker gave in those games. And watching the show, I kind of had to eat my words on that.
Yeah.
I hope we get a similar situation with Mr. Fantastic in this movie.
Yeah. And more casting is to come, because I think they also want to have Dr. Doom in this movie as well. Also, they're trying, I think I've heard a rumor they're trying to cast Silver Surfer, Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah,
apparently.
They were trying to cast Silver Surfer and Galactus.
Why Anya Taylor-Joy?
Was one of the rumors.
Yeah, Anya Taylor-Joy. It was just a rumor that she might be there. But they're still looking for Silver Surfer, who that's going to be there.
Silver Surfer isn't a woman.
I don't know. I mean,
do you check it? Wait, hold on. Okay, yeah. In one obscure thing, she was a completely different character and got the power cosmic. But that's not Aubyn Sur. Just get what's his name?
Doug Jones did play him in Tim Story Fantastic.
He was the physical performer, but Lawrence Fishburne was the voice.
Just get Lawrence Fishburne.
Lawrence Fishburne was the voice. They could just make it all.
Get the guy who did the body for him. Just get the guy. He's good.
Doug Jones, who's pretty old now.
Doug Jones, just play him as the Baron from What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, why not? Just do it. Who cares?
We'll see that there. Chris, you have an issue with the casting at all? Some of these guys.
I was at work when this dropped. I was having lunch and I opened my phone and it just posted Happy Valentine's Day. I was like, this is such a cute, aesthetically pleasing way to announce a casting.
Uh-huh.
It's a really fun picture. It's fun, and
they're Marvel's first family.
Marvel's first family, and Doctor Strange says it in Multiverse of Madness when he meets John Krasinski. Like, didn't you guys chart in the '60s? And this movie, the MCU's Fantastic Four is like the same writer or showrunner from WandaVision.
Yeah, it's Matt Shankman who is the writer on this. I think he stepped down from the director's chair. I don't know if they have somebody new or replacing him.
Yeah, so that kind of makes sense for the whole 1960s aesthetic and style. I totally understand where everyone's coming from with Pedro Pascal. Marvel's doesn't always they don't always make the best casting. Like sometimes, like as of late, it's like very who's the popular actor everyone knows and loves.
Yeah, let's put them in. We're in the days of old where the MCU was first getting started out. It was always, you know, guys that you wouldn't think would be playing these roles. It was always like guys that were lesser known. The guys that were just like, okay, you've kind of seen them around, but they weren't really the leads in anything. Guys like a Chris Hemsworth, like a Chris Evans, like a Jeremy Renner or a Scarlett Johansson. And they've kind of gotten away from that recently with projects like Moon Knight, to an extent, Captain Marvel.
Yeah. So I really like Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm. I think that he looks kind of cool with the he kind of looks like a Kennedy, you know what I mean?
Which if you're going for that 60s aesthetic, I think he's perfect for that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a character that And he's an actor that had to take a character like Eddie Munson, where in the first couple episodes of his run on Stranger Things, I did not like him at all. I thought he was like playing it way too cartoonish. But when you actually got to see him interact with the other characters, when you got to see him interact with the kids, where you got to see his chemistry with that girl, Chrissy, you saw the human behind that. And I think Quinn is fantastic at playing that.
Yeah. Eben Moss Backrick.
Yeah, sorry. Call him by his proper name, cousin.
Merry Christmas, lizards. his voice sounds like I can imagine that voice was behind a giant like rock man thing. So I agree. The most dodgy choice is Pedro Pascal. Is like, is he just a face, or is he gonna be Reed Richards? You know,
yeah. Out of all four of this cast, he feels like the one that was the safe bet.
Yeah,
and I want more than anything to be proven wrong with that, because I kind of had similar misgivings about him being Joel in The Last of Us, and he proved me wrong on that show.
He's a talented actor. Like he's versatile. He has range, but yeah, I to everyone's point, is the concern going forward, is he just the face, or is he going to be the character?
It's like a problem where he's almost too famous, to where you don't see where even in performances where he is phenomenal in, like with like The Last of Us, like even going back to stuff like Game of Thrones with Oberyn Martell, you don't really see the character. You see Pedro Pascal. And even to an extent with The Mandalorian, even though last season it was basically purely a voiceover.
Just a voiceover, yeah.
So this director is going to be directed by Matt Shakman. Matt Shakman, who produced WandaVision. He also did episodes of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Well there. So that's pretty much the extent of what he's done there. And he also did some episodes of Fargo, Game of Thrones. His only other feature film was a film called Cut Bank, which I've never seen before. I've never seen that one. I was kind of, you know, bringing up It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, him doing there. Maybe Glenn Howerton, I thought, would have maybe been a decent reader. See him kind of burst out there.
My fan cast for the longest time was Bill Hader as Reed.
Bill Hader was in the running for a lot of people, would have maybe liked that. I think another big name kind of tossed around was Diego Luna was also tossed around there as well from Andor. He probably would have made a pretty good, decent choice. He's not as exposed as Pedro Pascal there. You have that. I guess people just gave up on John Krasinski after they saw him in multiple Madness.
We want to see it so bad. And then we got it. It was like, we good.
Yeah, I guess people just gave up on that, I guess. Like, okay.
Well, they did nothing with him. I actually think that's a complete disservice to that attempt. He gets a couple of lines, does something really stupid in a movie that's pretty stupid for the most part.
I really love Multiverse of Madness. And my justification about the choices he makes is Reed is trying to de-escalate. It was like he's saying that, hey, if you don't back down, then Black Bolt can fuck you up.
Okay, first of all, Reed Richards is the smartest human being in the Marvel universe.
Okay, tell me you have never met a guy who is an absolute genius, but in certain situations is a fucking moron.
Honestly, Black Bolt should have just killed Wanda and not even tried to de-escalate the situation.
But they're not. But by their argument, she's dreamwalking. She is possessing this ostensibly innocent woman.
Yeah. So we're not getting a debate about Doctor Strange here.
That's a conversation we can have on a later date.
Yeah. So I guess people, like I said, just gave up on him as Reed Richards there.
Also, I feel like Krasinski's a much more interesting director than he is as an actor. I was like, I really dug both Quiet Place movies. I'm curious to see what he does with that movie, if.
Yeah. And some people did have issues with Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm. They said he's not hot enough to be Johnny Storm. There was that.
He had Doja Cat sliding in his DMs after Eddie Munson.
Well, like, I mean, Doja Cat is, I mean, she's got a thing for certain types, so that's not really anything there, but that's not necessarily anything. But Chris, you were about to say something?
Or? Yeah, what's crazy is that it wasn't. It's just the way the internet and just the pop culture zeitgeist moves. We build people up and then we take them down. At the end of season 4 of Stranger Things, the internet was like thirsting after Joseph Quinn. Like, oh, he's so cute. He's so he's amazing.
Hey, they dropped that behind the scenes video of him rehearsing the guitar part of Master of Puppets, and yeah, I get it.
There were praise, like people loved him, and suddenly he's not hot enough. He was hot.
It's mostly because I think for the longest time the fan cast for Johnny was Zac Efron, who basically is picture of Adonis, and you have this guy who is is like very handsome in the face, very talented musically, but kind of is like an awkward nerdy dude.
And also,
they're casting him in a Marvel movie. You think he's not going to get in that gym and on them roids?
Like Will Poulter. Like he glowed up and and played freaking
Adam Warlock.
Adam Warlock.
Poulter got hot overnight.
Like fast.
Like I saw him in that Hulu show Dope Sick, where he's like shirtless, and it was like, God damn.
Yeah. And also Pedro Pascal, it wasn't long ago everyone was calling him Zaddy. He's such a daddy. Pedro and Oscar Isaac, they're daddies, and suddenly he's not hot anymore.
Hey, like it's a state of mind.
It really,
daddy is a state of mind.
I don't know. It's the way people like just switch up when they don't like something. It's weird. Like these two men used to be like, they were at a point the guys, and suddenly with this one casting announcement.
But that's kind of how the internet works. That's how Hollywood works.
I know.
One minute you're on top. One minute you're the big thing, and then the next, who are you again?
Yeah, I know. Like that's my point. It's sad. That's all. It's sad. Yeah.
So people who were in the running,
like we kind of had this conversation when we did our review of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the Amazon show, and it's like I made a joke about the internet trying to gaslight me into thinking Maya Erskine isn't hot.
Some people who else were in the running there of Johnny Storm. So yeah, mentioned Zac Efron. You also had some other people, Stranger Things there, like Darcy Montgomery, who was also the Red Ranger.
Dacre Montgomery, who was if somebody tried to draw Zac Efron from memory.
You also have Austin Butler, who is some people want. That was kind of a rumor.
I don't mind that. I was like,
hey, mama. Flame on.
Hey, mama. We got to go fight Galactus.
So you have
Victor Von Doom. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
I forgot that people also wanted Penn Badgley as Reed Richards. Some people wanted him as Reed Richards.
Yeah, when I first heard that, I was like, okay, I can kind of see it.
Some people
he has the look.
I think Penn Badgley, he's not as also overexposed. Some people also, I forgot about him, William Jackson Harper, who was in Ant-Man 3. Some people thought he was.
That was one that I was 100% down for. And when I saw his role in Quantumania, I was like, oh, really?
Yeah. But same, I think the casting that most people probably agree with out of everybody is probably Vanessa Kirby as Storm.
Yeah. Even in my fan casting, it was between her and Betty Gilpin.
Betty Gilpin would have also been there. So there you go. This is Marvel's first family. So it looks like it'll be set in the 60s. Somebody deduced that because the magazine that Ben Grimm's written, you have like President Nixon on the magazine. So there is 60s.
The outfits that you see in this drawing, the furniture, the set decor, it has a very like 60s aesthetic. And you also have the robot Herbie.
Yeah, the little robot Herbie there. So let's see. And I think because they're all supposed to be kind of similar in age, right? That's kind of like the thing, right?
The only one that would be the like little brother of the group would be Johnny.
Johnny. Okay. Yeah. And I think So we'll see. So any final thing, Dust, before we move on here?
Not really.
Okay. There you go. Fantastic.
Hope it's good.
2025 is when we're getting this.
Yeah, knock on wood. It's like, please be good.
Yeah.
I cannot take another bad Fantastic Four adaptation. Holy shit. I can't do it.
hoping it is good. Yeah. So, that was our news there.